I want to ask Judge Lynn when she thinks she has first seen the effective use of appellate counsel in the trial court, about what stage of the litigation, and ask her to talk about whether, and then move into Daubert challenges.
Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I first see appellate lawyers showing up at the time of 12B6 motions that sound like a prelude to a summary judgment. They're not usually arguing them, but they're lurking. I know you. I know you're there to induce me into a screw-up, and I'm going to try very hard to resist the temptation. So the appellate lawyers are not usually arguing a motion to dismiss, but they're there. And in a big case, we're going to talk about Daubert in a few minutes, they're there for that too. Sometimes they argue those. I don't think it's always a good idea, as I'll say in a few minutes, but they're present for a substantial Daubert motion that could be case dispositive.
I don't have much to add to that. I do want to get your input because we talked about it. I want to ask you to move right into Daubert then and talk about your impression of appellate lawyers showing up to argue a Daubert challenge.
So I thought we were fancy, and you're not fancy, and we say Daubert.
I was just stepping my game up for you. But
well, if I'm going to continue to say vor dire, I'm going to mispronounce all my words. So the point I want to make about Daubert motions is that in a case where they are potentially case dispositive, and I do a lot of patent litigation, and in those, Daubert motions are often case dispositive. I see a lot of Daubert motions that are being asserted just to sort of give a sneak peek at how it's going to go and to educate me on issues that could be problematic during the trial, and nobody really thinks that I'm going to kick the expert. But in the patent arena, not infrequently, an issue will come up where a Daubert challenge might actually eliminate an expert, and that might end the litigation. So I see appellate lawyers in the room, sometimes arguing, sometimes whispering in the ear of the trial lawyer. Generally speaking, I don't think this is a particularly effective place for appellate lawyers to be heard by me, because you really have to get in the weeds on these experts, and usually, not always, but usually appellate lawyers are not patent experts. Now, the best appellate lawyers in the United States are now all arguing patent cases before the Supreme Court of the United States because they're taking a lot of those cases. But they still don't really get into the weeds of the details about the requirements in patent litigation. So I think they're very useful. You're very useful to be in the room and make sure that the lawyers, trial lawyers, are arguing in a structure that will be helpful to you as you see what an appeal might look like. But I prefer, if I have my choice, and I don't dictate who argues to me, but if I have my choice, I'm going to have trial lawyers arguing the Daubert motions because they know more of the nitty-gritty about what that testimony is about.
And I just will say, in my whole 2.5 years on the trial bench, I haven't had an appellate lawyer argue a Robinson challenge, a Daubert. I'm from Deer Park, Texas. I'll use her word now. A Daubert challenge in 2.5 years. I've never had an appellate lawyer show up and have really any role except maybe be at counsel table. I don't think I've had one take a speaking role. And I agree that it's usually so fact-intensive about causation or damages that the trial lawyers seem to be the person who is handling that in the trial court, and I think effectively. So I want to move now a little bit to trial selection and jury selection and ask you your impression about appellate lawyers and jury selection and a specific focus on your impressions of preservation of error in jury selection.
Well, I am sure that all of you will agree with me that you think you should be in the room during the trial, and I think you should be in the room during the trial, too, if the case can support your involvement at that level. So if you're in the room and you're in the room for jury selection, you might help the trial lawyers because in 19 years I've never had anyone preserve error in jury selection. I'm an old trial lawyer myself, so I'm sure we both feel often the desire that we suppress to actually jump over the bench and take the role of the lawyer and do it the way we think you should do it.
You suppress that.
Yes, I do. Well, you're going to be really awesome if you jump over the bench.
I could just step over the bench.
Yeah, I just would crawl under the bench. So lawyers make objections when I don't sustain a challenge for cause, and then they don't do anything about it. Batson challenges the same. I don't know what that's about. I mean, it's pretty easy to preserve error. And so when no one ever tries to do it, I'm thinking, I'm golden on this. Or was that just something that you felt like saying and you really didn't think it was any good? I mean, I just don't get it. And it really projects the wrong thing, I think, to a judge. If you object to my not striking someone for cause and then you don't preserve the error, then the bubble above my head is saying, well, this lawyer is just saying words that the lawyer doesn't believe in. And that's not really a good attitude for me to have at the very beginning of a case. So if it's worth objecting that I haven't stricken a juror for cause, then put your money where your mouth is and preserve error, and then I'll know you're serious about it. So part of the job of the trial lawyer is to train the judge a little bit, and that's not very good training at the very beginning of the case. So nobody ever preserves error in jury selection.